Now, a great proportion of your work in the last decade, pretty well, has been done in Europe. You've been back to America once or twice, but yes, most of it has been done here. What do you think about this theory a lot of people put forward that one does one's best work where one's roots are?
That would leave out Bernard Shaw, Oscar Wilde, James Joyce, to name a few Irishmen.
Yeah.
Ernest Hemingway, Mark Twain, Irving, to name a few Americans, and we could go on like that. You know, I don't put myself in that league at all, but I don't think there's any truth at all in it.
Have you anything against Faulkner, Cousins, Marquand, and O'Hara?
Oh, you mean because they stayed home?
Yeah, and concentrated in a small area.
Marquand spends a lot of time writing about New England in Bermuda.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. And Eric Ambler, I understand, you did a film with his once, has never really been to any of the places
no,
that he writes about.
No,
yeah.
Of course, Eric Ambler wouldn't be fair because he's invented a kind of a Balkans of his own, which is better than the original, I think. But I think there is a case in Roots. I'm not sure that... I think the best work is... creative work is done about the places one understands best. They don't have to be your native land, however, and you don't have to be there at the time you're doing the work. What could be more Dublin than Joyce, sitting in Zurich writing Ulysses?
Well, now, on those terms, you're at home in a lot of places, and there's a lot of talk these days about people being exiles or expatriates. Do you think there's a trend among artists towards being world citizens?
I wish it were true. I just thought of another name to fling at you. Dante, you know, he did all right in exile. But I don't think of myself as an exile at all.
That's what I wanted to know.
No, not at all, because I've lived abroad all my life. As a child, I lived in China and in Europe. In other words, I'm certainly a Middle Westerner.
Your big impact initially was made at home with subjects, apart from, well, of course, we couldn't call War of the Worlds at home, could we? But Citizen Kane was something which was a...
That's a film, but in the theater I certainly have done, to my sorrow, very few American things, mostly classics.
Well, in terms of speaking of work, your initial impact, which everybody knows was fantastic. In the light of the years that have passed between, do you think you'd rather have had a chance to mature in relative anonymity?
No.
It wouldn't have had any advantage as far as you're concerned.
No. I don't think anonymity is an advantage to anybody who depends on the public. That's a kind of a kind of obvious. If you depend on the public, the less anonymous you are, the better you're doing.
Was there ever a time when you said to yourself, now I've got it made, I'm here, and nothing can ever happen to me now?
No. No. I wish there had been such a moment, no, because I have to go back to the very beginning of my career, which was in Ireland, where I played for 2 years.
Yeah.
So that I really didn't begin in America, I began in Ireland. And after the first play that I did, in which I made really the biggest success I've ever made in my life, everything since then has been downhill, a newspaper came out to review the second play I did and said, well, Orson Welles is certainly a bitter disappointment to those of us who'd looked to him to lead the Irish theater. And I've been a bitter disappointment to people for about 30 years now in show business. So I've never known that moment when there's been an all-around chorus of huzzas and I could look at myself in the mirror with any kind of genuine satisfaction. Leave artistic questions alone, just in terms of ordinary show business success.
A lot of people were building you up as the great future when you did The War of the World.
And that was years later, of course.
That was years later. You were only what?
Yeah.
21. Then at the age of 25, you go out and do Citizen Kane. Now, everybody blew you up at that point.
No, not everybody.
No? You had a few detractors then?
A lot.
During the making of the film, but when it was actually
critically
made.
Too. You'd be surprised how many people said, who says there's anything new in this picture? You know, this was all done by Uffe in 1930 and so on. By no means, you know.
Well, I think history, if I can use that larger word, shows.
I'm grateful to you.
History shows that Citizen Kane had a tremendous influence on the films that followed it. There was one story to the effect that DeMille literally went and scrapped the film he was making and started over again on the basis of Citizen Kane. You may have had detractors, but there's no question that Kane had a tremendous impact on the business and on the public.
Mm.
Well, now, at this stage, at the age of 25, do you think in any way this went to your head at all?
No, because as I say, I'd been such a big star when I was 15 that really everything seemed to come down to me afterwards. I never lived up to that first moment of glory.
In the last century, you wouldn't have had the same opportunities to spread yourself around in media.
More.
More? Please explain.
I wouldn't have had television or movies because they didn't exist, but I would have had a critical public, an egghead public, a professional public conditioned for the kind of fellow I am rather than conditioned for the specialist. They said they welcomed the adventurer in the 19th century much more than they do today. My kind of fellow is the real outsider.
Well, now, how would you have been an adventurer? I would have seen you as an actor-manager in the 19th century, with your own theater.
Yeah, maybe. Well, I've been that too here.
I know you
have. Don't think I would have been probably much... I might have been more successful, but I mightn't have made any more of a permanent go of it under those circumstances. In the 19th century, I might have ended up in Parliament, you know.
That would have been
in the 18th century, you had people like Sheridan who were cabinet ministers. Imagine an actor daring to do that today.
Have you ever considered running for the Senate? Or
yes, I very nearly ran for the Senate, and in Wisconsin was the place they decided I ought to run. And it was the year I decided not to. And it was the year that McCarthy did run and did win. It was been on my conscience ever since.
I can understand that. Do you think that you perhaps spread yourself too thin?
No, I don't think anybody spreads himself too thin. I think people say that about me when they want to explain why I'm not better than they think I ought to be, and it's very nice of them to say it. But I think people specialize too much. Everybody, you know. I think anybody who can communicate in any medium can do it in at least two or three different ways, not to try.
Well, we're not talking so much about mediums now, which I'd like to come to later, because you've gone into a lot of media as well. But these are different art forms as opposed to media.
I suppose you can say that if somebody doesn't spread themselves too much, they can have a more solid and enduring and established success. And if that had been what I wanted, which it never has been, then I shouldn't have tried so many different things. But I've been always more interested in experiment than in accomplishment.
Well, of all the things you've done, is there one or one of these fields in which you would like to be remembered, if that doesn't sound too pompous?
Well, it doesn't sound pompous, but I'm against posterity on principle. I think it's almost as vulgar as success.
Well, now, one of the things you've been is a political commentator.
Yes.
Now, as an artist...
Till I got fired.
For being too much of a political commentator. Do you think that an artist...
No, I got fired at the time when everybody who didn't... who wasn't an extreme rightist got fired off the networks as a political commentator. And a lot of them are back again. Professionals,
yeah.
And I just wasn't in permanently in that business. There was just a big moment. You may remember.
You were the victim
period.
Of the trend.
And there were a lot of us.
Yeah.
You know, I was in excellent company. I wasn't, this is pre-McCarthy, I wasn't considered a communist. I was just one of the liberals, and they all went. There wasn't one left for about a half year, you remember.
Well, now this is where we run into this business about, I use the phrase, spreading yourself too thin. Do you think that an artist should ally himself to a political party or leader? Doesn't it in some way stultify his function as an artist?
Maybe it does. I think a human being and a citizen should. And I believe my own allegiance is stronger to the idea of citizenship, and my own loyalty is greater to the idea of myself as a member of the human family than it is to as a member of any profession. I don't take art as seriously as politics.
Well, that kills the next one, really.
I'll give you another answer.
I was going to say, as a performer, assuming that you have two political parties in any given country, which represent roughly 50% of the population, with a little leeway here and there, don't you, as a performer, automatically cut your audience in half if you show allegiance?
If the audience is angry enough, I suppose you do. And I suppose you're a fool to do it. But if you happen to be more interested in the political question than in the size of your audience, then it doesn't matter.
This is a risk you're prepared to take.
Because I took.
Yeah, you took it.
I took and
would take again.
Yes. Not because I think I'm God's gift to politics at all, but just if I feel strongly enough about something, I don't regard my career as something so precious that it must come before my convictions.
Do you think, in your experience, is it that it's wise to talk back to the press?
Oh, it's fatal to talk back to the press. Hopeless.
No percentage in it at all.
No, none at all. I'm suing a French paper this week. Well, that isn't talking back to the press. That's trying to get some dough out of some people for a libel. But libel's another question.
Well, if we can get you to commit yourself on this, what do you think of the standard of criticism in art forms in the press?
I think criticism is fairly high. It's less venal than it was in our grandfather's day, when a lot more newspapers were frankly blackmailers than are today. I think what's wrong with New York criticism is that too much power is invested in too few people, which is bad. If they were the greatest critics in the world, the Herald Tribune and New York Times people shouldn't have life and death powers over a play in New York. That's, it seems to me, evidently wrong.
These are the so-called butchers of Broadway.
I never called them that.
Yeah. Well, I didn't suggest that you...
Not because I have any reason to placate them. That's a hopeless and lost cause. But no, I don't. I'm not criticizing them for not being critics. I just think it's a shame they're that powerful. But they're perfectly honorable men, well educated, and as capable of judging a play as anybody else.
Do you think there's a case for artists becoming critics?
No.
There is a tendency. I
think it's bad.
Yeah.
I think if an artist wants to pontificate, he ought to get off in another area than his own shop.
And do it.
Yes, I don't believe in telling artists, what do you mean, you a painter? How dare a painter say to us who we should vote for, or that this is a good play or not? I don't believe a professional is the best critic. I believe in amateurism and an amateur approach to criticism and to everything. Very passionately believe in it. But I do think that when someone who is constantly referring his work to critics and to criticism, whether he wants to or not, who must, the one area where he mustn't pontificate is as a critic in his own particular field.
Do you think it's possible to be an amateur critic? Isn't there something in the mere fact of being asked to be a critic, which
turns you into a... Yeah. We're off the air.
You're ahead of me.
For what I just said. Yes. I'm afraid you're right.
It does seem to happen.
It has a terrible effect, yes. I've seen it. They asked me, the Sunday Observer, you know, in London, asked me to do a few months after Ken Tynan left to go to the New Yorker as a drama critic. And for a moment, you know, temptation, the fun of, you know,
yeah,
taking a belt and a few things myself was very great, and I pulled myself up sharply. And I've seen a couple of actors who have taken that job on a temporary basis who are good writers, too. I mean, as good writers as they are actors. And they're strangely dim and poor at the job, I think. And
yeah,
I'm sure I would have been worse.
Well, during your career, you've probably accomplished more in your line than most people do in a lifetime. Are you in any danger of becoming bored with, say, your current project?
No. No, I don't think so. That's I haven't done as much work as you say. I'm shocked by how little work I've done, really. It just seems like a lot. And certainly not bored with what I do.
I don't think many people would agree with you about not having done as much as I say.
It looks that way. If you jump around, do a lot of different things, you know, you give an impression of a bigger volume of work than the facts. I feel very ashamed of myself not to do more.
Now, for example, you're a magician. Now, this takes hours of practice. Do you keep
I'm an out-of-practice magician.
You're an out-of-practice magician. If I handed you a deck of cards now...
I could wig my way through it, you know, but I'm not what I was when I was...
When you were in practice.
Working it. Yeah,
you started at that pretty young.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, my father was an amateur magician and loved it, and I took lessons as a boy the way... you know, kids play the fiddle and so on. And so I was a real wunderkind with a pack of cards. And all I do now is just what I can remember from those days. I got in now to what I do entirely is what we call mentalism, mind reading and all that jazz. And
yeah,
that requires much less practice, you know.
Well, with the minds that are around, I can see your point.
It's just a gigantic bluff, in other words, which is far easier than keeping the fingers in trim.
Yeah. I don't want you necessarily to commit yourself all the way on this. It's a matter of degree. But to what extent have you controlled your destiny, and to what extent has your destiny been controlled by circumstances?
Well, let's take the first part of it. I've only controlled my destiny to the extent that I have seldom deliberately done something that I felt to be ignoble.
It's a shade negative.
That's about all I can say. So that you go further and say, how much does destiny control me? A great deal. You know, I'm the victim of the most incredible series of misfortunes and the most incredible series of good luck strikes. You know, both.
The monetary system has been one of your real bugbears, hasn't it? One has read many stories of you putting yourself into a production in which you believed, doing something else for money and pouring that money into the production in which
believed. That's right. I do that all the time because I never would have... I was an actor manager for a long time, and I was an actor manager because there was such a thing as radio. And I made $1,500 a week as an anonymous radio actor in those good golden days when you could do that. And about $1,200 went into the theater. And there would have been no theater if I couldn't have put that money into it. I've just finished a picture now called Don Quixote Goes to the Moon, which was made without a script, entirely improvised, is an extremely experimental picture. I could no more have got... I don't know anybody crazy enough to have put up money for it. And if there's anything valuable that I've done as a director in films in years, this is it. If it's a flop, it's an interesting one, but it never could have even begun if I'd had to get somebody else to finance it. So I've had to use my career as an actor rather cynically, that's true. I've had to do a lot of, take a lot of jobs and keep myself alive as a terrible word, movie star, something I never wanted to be, simply because it provided me with the dough to do a few pictures.
Accepting the fact that you don't take art all that seriously as opposed to other things, Do you feel that your ability as an artist has been in any way diminished by accepting such things as
greatly,
for money?
Greatly diminished.
But it's been worth it.
My position, too, has been greatly diminished. In other words, you spoke of Citizen Kane. It's the only picture I've ever made with a contract of that kind. If anybody would give me another contract of that kind, I think I could make a picture better than that. But I've never been given a second chance.
Well, now, in terms of being an adventurer and of being an artist, I don't want to try and pin you down on this, but there's a balance somewhere. Would you say that you live to work or work to live?
I regard working as part of life. I don't know how to distinguish between the two. I know that one can, and people do. I honestly think that the best answer to that question that I can give you is that the two things aren't separated in my mind.
There are people who devote everything to their work and have no life at
yes.
all. But you have lived in a big way and you have worked in a big way.
And I don't separate them. To me, they're all part of that work is an expression of life for me.
Does the word home mean anything to you?
Oh, yes.
And when you think of it, where do you think of it?
That's a problem. That's a problem, because as a kid, I was moved around everywhere. I have lots of homes, you know. Lots of homes, but I would like to have the one. But I don't, you know.
You don't have a rosebud?
No.
No such thing for you?
No.
Was there anything in the film, you think, that comes out of that? I mean, is that out of your personal experience, that you
no.
didn't have a rosebud?
No, I think I'm ashamed of Rose, but I think it's the rather tawdry device. It's the thing I like least in Kane, and it's kind of a dollar book,
but
Freudian gag, you know. Really, it doesn't stand up very well.
But one must have somewhere inside one a sense of home.
Yes.
You must have it.
Yes.
Where is it?
That's a wonderful question, you know. But while I sit here and think about it, all the viewers, you know, will be bored. It'll take me so long to try and think. It might take 40 years.
Mean
you
I
know,
finally got
Kane.
You?
Yes, you got it. I suppose it's Woodstock, Illinois, if it's anywhere. I went to school there for 4 years, and if I try to think of the home, it's that. That isn't fair either, a place where you went to school.
So you really have, in your mind, no sense of home?
No, so several homes, you know.
Several homes. You once said something I thought very interesting and moving about Rome, New York, Paris, and London. Can you remember it?
No.
You said, I can't remember it all that well either. You thought of, was it Rome as a mistress? And New York as a place to go back to? And London as a place you couldn't resist going back to from time to time? And I forget what it was about Paris. This means nothing to you.
I'm sure I said it, you know, but I can't remember, you know. I have a lot of places. Peking, you know, I was... spent a lot of my childhood there has a great meaning to me, but I wouldn't know how to explain it in terms of home. We live in Rome now because my wife's family is there. We're longing to get away, you know, break loose.
Yeah.
Because it's turning into Philadelphia with spaghetti, you know, now.
Especially with the Olympics coming up.
Oh, yes, this will be a good year not to be in Rome.
Well, where, most of all, would you like to settle down if you had to settle down?
I'd like to live in Spain better than anywhere in the world.
What part of Spain?
Avila.
Avila, you've got me. Where is that?
Avila is in the central part of Spain. Horrible climate. Too hot in the summer, too cold in the winter. Very strange, tragic place. I don't know why. I've got a great thing about
it. Does poverty not bother you when you live in the midst of it?
Yes, poverty bothers me when I live here in the Maurice Hotel, too.
Now, nobody in his right mind would deny that you have a magnificent voice. Do you consider this, for an actor, an advantage or a hindrance?
Oh, no, a help. You know what Stanislavski said, la voix, la voix, toujours la voix. That's, no actor was ever handicapped by a voice. He can be handicapped by using it too beautifully. And if you tell me that I do that, I have no defense. It's just I, except to apologize.
I'm not going to tell you that you do that, but it is true that you are capable with a magnificent organ such as yours of conveying emotion without meaning it. More
no,
so
isn't
than
that
a man
acting.
Oh, I'm sorry. Is that acting?
Isn't it?
You never mean it when you're conveying emotion?
Well, if I meant it in a murder scene, I'd kill the girl or the man.
I've been told you've come very close to doing that a couple of
untrue,
times.
Untrue.
No. You're sure
untrue,
now?
Untrue.
I've heard a couple of stories along those
I've
lines.
I've heard those stories and they're untrue. The only thing is the poor Caesar who got stabbed once. And that was inadvertent. It wasn't passion. It was a bad aim.
Well, I think I heard about an Emilia that got...
That's in Othello. And the poor little girl, Gudrun, is about as high as this table. And the job of not hurting her in the strangling scene was so great that when they would see this monster descending on her, naturally the story began to go around how roughly I was treating her. But it isn't so, no. I don't believe that acting is anything except convincing the audience of something that isn't true.
Isn't it true that there are a great many superb actors who have become such by realization of the fact that they have indifferent voices and have worked twice as hard for that reason? I mean, I'll cite examples if you like. To me, Laurence Olivier does not have a great voice.
No, we don't agree. I think he has a superb
voice. You think he has a superb voice?
Oh, marvelous.
John Gielgud?
Marvelous.
Marvelous voice. We don't agree. I'm interviewing you. We'll drop it.
He's a... But you're distinguishing between tenors and baritones, you know. And those are two tenor voices. One is a heroic tenor, one a kind of a lyric tenor. And I'm a bass baritone, you know. There's no difference in quality. It's just a different register.
Well, I must beg to differ, but as I say, I'm interviewing you, so we'll go on
right.
on that basis. Getting back to the stories, is there any? There seem to be a lot of apocryphal stories about you. Is there any truth to the one about with an Iago that you once suddenly threw an epileptic fit and which terrified this Iago, and that you subsequently said, "How can you rehearse an epileptic fit?"
I can remember saying, "How can you rehearse an epileptic fit?" Because I have never been able to play that scene well in Othello. And what I should have said was, how do you act an epileptic fit? Something that I haven't been able to answer yet, since I always had to fake it. And I know it's been wonderfully done in that scene, and I'm one of the actors that's invariably stunk it up. But if it terrified any of the Iagos I've played with, I'm delighted to hear it. I wouldn't like to say that was untrue.
The fact that you say you've invariably stunk it up, is that one of the reasons you keep doing it?
No, that scene... I was speaking of the actual epilepsy.
No, but I mean, you keep doing, you've done Othello many times.
Yes, but you can't cut out the fact that he has an epileptic fit. And I think every great role, every great tragic role, has the scenes that the actor who is playing it can't do. We don't know about Garrick, but the greatest actors cannot do every scene in Lear. They can do 4 out of 5 if they're best, or 3 out of 5 if they're not so good, you know. But so there's always the scene you can't do, and probably many. There's the one you know you can't do, put it that way. And the fit of Othello, I've never licked. Maybe the next time I play it, I'll figure out a way.
Well, the fact that you know you can't do it doesn't stop you from trying.
No, I do my best, you know, and keep the play going and try to find something. I get it over with pretty quickly, though. Every time. In the movies, I cut to a lot of seagulls.
staying on the subject of style, I think there's a general feeling in Europe that Americans, as such, American performers, have no sense of period. That is to say,
True.
You'll get... you get a lot of English and French actors in with an American actor playing the lead, and suddenly you hear him say God instead of God, and the whole effect is gone. You are one to whom I would say this does not apply, but do you think it is true, basically,
yes,
of the Americans?
Yes, it is true. One of it is because we don't put on those plays enough. Imagine trying to have a generation of fine ballet dancers if instead of having a permanent ballet company, you produced Swan Lake every 4 or 5 years.
Yeah.
Or imagine trying to have a generation of opera singers if Tannhäuser or Aida, or whatever you want to name, Don Giovanni, was done the same amount of times that we do Hamlet in New York or in the New World.
Do you think that this...
And naturally they do it better in England because they do those plays all the time.
Does this rule out Americans doing Shakespeare, basically?
Not at all. But until Americans believe the necessity to learn what they don't know, it rules them out. What's bad about American actors is their arrogant assumption that speech, movement, wearing a costume, all of this kind of thing, is unnecessary as long as you're vital. That's a great weakness among American actors. Always has been, not just with this generation. It was, I found it true when I was producing Shakespeare, when I first started, 1,000 years ago in New York, was still that way. And there are American actors with that sense, and whoever wants to can do it. It isn't the inner capacity. It's the feeling that it isn't very necessary or important. The assumption that Macbeth is just some kind of a gangster without bothering to find out what it was like to be a king, or what it meant to be a king when Shakespeare wrote the play.
Is it possible in present-day America to understand that, to comprehend that, as opposed to the tradition that has been handed down in Europe as far as acting is concerned?
It's all an act of imagination. I think the greatest living actor of Shakespeare is only guessing. It's maybe a divine guess, but it's still a guess. What's the tradition? Most tradition is just a succession of bad habits, you know. Is less actors, lesser actors imitating the affectations of bigger actors. I don't believe in tradition. I just believe in practice, in the living practice of a thing.
Europeans have a great admiration for what you referred to as the vitality in American
acting. Yes, which is wonderful, but it isn't a substitute for speech. In other words, if you don't know how to sustain a line of iambic pentameter, you're not going to get very far in Shakespeare any more than you're going to get very far in ballet if you can't get up on your points. You just have to get up on your points before you start, no matter how vital you are.
Well, the current trend in American acting would seem to be away from this.
It is, so it rules them out for all formal theater, right down through the 18th century. It's the prose theater tradition, wonderful for anything from Chekhov on.
You don't think there's a danger that it may be ruled out entirely?
Yes.
You think it's possible?
Yes.
Yeah, I read something by Peggy Webster not very long ago where she said that certain people should be put on film at this point because otherwise nobody will know how
to move. That wouldn't do any good. Now I'll go over to your point of view about teaching. You never learn anything from that except to laugh at the things that have become dated, Besides, if Margaret Webster had her way, she'd put Morris Evans on film, and what could be more less in education?
You don't think it'd be an advantage just learning how to take a sword out of a scabbard?
Well, they wouldn't learn it from Morris Evans or Margaret Webster.
No, I can see your point. Yes, right. Now, I want to get on something else. Has your own acting been inhibited by directing yourself?
Never, no.
Some people think that Harry Lime was perhaps your best realized performance in films.
It was the best part I ever had in films.
It was a pretty short part.
Yeah, but,
you were talked about a lot, but it was a short
best
part.
Best part I ever had. I don't think it's been as good a part in a movie since the war for any actor.
But you'd agree that you also had a good director?
Oh, marvelous.
And Carol Reed.
Marvelous. No.
But had you directed it yourself, you don't think it would have made that much difference?
Oh, I don't think that's a fair question,
Well, I'm trying to get back to my original question, which was...
Because I don't want to seem to be ungrateful to Carol Reed. And yet I don't really and honestly think that an actor who is a director needs a director in movies as much as he does on the stage. It's so easy to direct yourself in movies. It's very hard in the theater. And yet actors have been directing themselves in the theater for 2,000 years. But in movies, it's very easy.
I'm going to try it another way. Would you like the opportunity of directing Charlie Chaplin?
Yes, I wrote a movie for him, and he agreed to do it for a year and finally got cold feet and bought the film from me. It was Monsieur Verdoux.
And he directed it
himself. Yes, I wanted to direct it, and for a long time he agreed to let me, and then he finally decided to make it himself.
Well, is it a fair question to ask you if you think it might have been a better performance in some ways had you directed it?
It would have been a better picture. I don't think it would have been a better performance, because he is essentially a great actor and a good director. And it is conceivable that he could have a better movie than he can make, a better talking movie than he can make as a director.
But this is simply a qualification of his directing ability.
Not of his acting ability.
And has nothing to do with whether he is acting at the same time as he's directing.
Not at all.
I see. Well, I'm stymied there, too.
No, I don't want to stymie you. Excuse me. I've been playing lawyers too often in movies the last couple of years, I think. I just got out of a big courtroom scene now, and I'm so used to thwarting the prosecutor here that's probably... I'm not being fair. I know what you're trying to get me to admit, that I would act better if I allowed myself to be directed, and it's something I don't want to admit because I get so few chances to direct. And I'm always being directed that I don't want to go around saying how glad I am to have directors because I'm always looking for a chance to direct.
That's fair enough. But
can't be more frank than that.
But they are basically two jobs, aren't they? Is it not possible that you could conceivably do a better job of one or the other if you had only one to concentrate on?
No. Not in movies.
Not in movies.
Not a real actor-director in movies. I'm convinced of it. I don't think that Olivier would be any better in Shakespeare in the movies with another director. I might, as a rival director, think somebody could make a better picture around it, as I do Chaplin, or as he might think about my pictures.
Yep.
But not. I don't think there's anything to do with him as an actor that amounts to anything. There might be a take or two you'd improve, but not enough so it matters. I think the real... First of all, I think directing is the most overrated job in the world. It's the only one I really love in show business, but I think it is tremendously overrated.
Well, now, can that be true in the sense that a great many people that I've talked to who have worked under you as a director have said that they have never been able to duplicate a performance under another director as they have under you? This is a statement from an actor or an actress, which seems to indicate that directing is to them terribly important.
I think it is to actors. I agree. But I think that the real...
Well, are you happy in this state? Would you like to be the kind of artist they are?
No. No, not at all, because I'm not really... You know, I don't regard myself as fundamentally a professional, you know, anyway. I'm basically an adventurer. And those people who are serious and are professional, truly and deeply serious at the expense of every other value in life, are probably the people who make the biggest contribution to art. I certainly wouldn't like to be one of them.
Do you believe in the principle of making a contribution?
Yes.
Do you think that by, in a sense, dividing yourself in this way, you are diffusing your contribution?
Probably.
Do you think that's a bad thing?
No. Not a bad thing for me. Might be a bad thing for art, but since I don't regard art as of prime importance, I've answered your question.
Then the hell with posterity.
Yes.
When you did Citizen Kane, The technical achievement was one of the things that attracted the attention of the profession and the critics. Now, you were 25 years of age. You wrote the script yourself. How much of this was teamwork? I mean, one does read of Greg Toland in connection with the film.
Quite rightly.
One assumes that he made some contributions in ideas and things of that kind, but how much of it was a one-man job and how much of it was teamwork?
Well, photographically, Toland came to me and offered himself, which was a very courageous thing to do. He was one of the leading cameramen in Hollywood, and I'd never heard of him. And he said, I wanted to make your picture because you've never made a picture. And I'd never been on what the British call the floor, on the set, before my first day directing a picture. I simply didn't know, except theoretically, how it must be done. And I've always had a deep conviction that there is no mystery to anything, and that it's only petty people who try to make photography or sound recording or acting or anything else sound difficult. I think you can teach any intelligent person to do any of those jobs in 2 or 3 days. You know, convinced of it. Toland was a technician who agreed with that, which is a fantastic thing. On the first day I arrived, I thought, after years of being a director in the theater, that the lights were set by the director, since they are in the theater. So I said, this is where it will be. Now let's move this light over here, and so on. I set the lights. Behind me, Toland was motioning to all the people, shut up, let him go ahead. And then balancing behind me without my knowing it, you see. I worked 5 days like that, until somebody told me, and I realized what a terrible thing I'd been doing. And Toland was furious that I'd been told.
That's very interesting.
It's a great tribute to him, I think. And he said, you don't know what it means, because you don't look at it from formula. So the minute I realized that, then I began asking for things which in my ignorance were impossible to do. Nobody ever asked. That I didn't intend as innovations. It just seemed to me that anything in a frame that you could look at, you ought to be able to do these things. Mm-hmm. So Toland said, let's go ahead and try. Now, under my contract, nobody could look at the rushes but me. If we ruined something, it didn't matter. Toland had that wonderful spirit, so we just went ahead and tried. So it was partly the great spirit of Toland, the fact that he was the greatest cameraman who ever lived and the fastest, and had that wonderful spirit, and partly my own ignorance. I didn't know what you couldn't do. I didn't deliberately set out to invent anything. It just seemed to me, why not? And there is a great gift that ignorance has to bring to anything, you know. That was the gift I brought to Kane, was ignorance.
This is a slightly ticklish question. On the one hand, you have been quoted as saying that if you want to make a motion picture, you have to raise $1 million to do it. But on the other hand, you have, in terms of some of the reports one hears, been accused of being irresponsible towards those who have put up $1 million, not being where you should be when you said you would be there. Is it fair to ask you for a reaction on that?
I've heard that over and over again. My answer is unanswerable to anybody who asks the question, because I always want the specific instance.
No, I can't.
And it can't be given.
Well, that's fair enough. I can't.
Can't be given. It's a reputation without any basis in fact at all. One of the basis of it is that I did a picture called Othello with my own money, and we had to do it with whatever money I could raise and stop until I raised some more. Now that took almost 4 years. Now there are still people today who say, I don't want to hire Wells as a director. It took him 4 years to make Othello.
On the other hand, you did Macbeth in 3 weeks, didn't you?
21 days, yes. And that was working for somebody, and the schedule was 23 days. I've never gone over schedule on a picture for a studio in my life. I've never gone over budget. That's a question of record.
You have demanded tremendous loyalty on the part of some of your actors in cases like this, and the extraordinary thing is that you always had it, haven't you?
Yes, been very lucky. Oh my, I've never had really a moment's disappointment from actors or any people. I've been so lucky in that respect. I've been miserably unlucky with producers and the money end of film production. I think, genuinely unlucky. I think I've had a lot of real bad breaks. I'm not crying about it, but it's true. But I've had the most wonderful good breaks and the most wonderful thing that anybody could have from the people you work with behind the camera and in front of it. I haven't got anybody I could complain of in all these years.
Do you think you'll ever again in your lifetime be given the opportunity to do another Citizen Kane?
I think I'll be able to do it. I think I'll be able to do it with, on certain kinds of film that don't cost as much. I'll never be able to make an expensive picture that way. I'll never be given that chance. Nobody will. Everything's against it. But I do think that I have a chance of making some interesting films for smaller budgets with my own money, or a lot of it. I think that film I've just finished is like that. I hope to make another one, but I don't expect anybody else will give it to me. I don't get jobs as a director. The only pictures they offer me, I can't accept. They're terrible.
I'll recommend you. What would you...
You should read the scripts they send.
Is it a fair question to ask you what you would most like to do?
Ever?
Ever.
I would like to do something which would leave at least the art form concerned or the profession better for my having done it.
Which is something we've covered and has been suggested that you have done.
Well, I hope so. I want to do more of that.
And
I don't really care in what form it is.
Do your concrete plans at the moment incorporate anything like this?
Yes, well, anything that I do that I think is a full expression of myself is intended along those lines. But I don't think I've answered that question fairly. I want to go back and say, yes, there is something I want to do that I've never done, and I do want to do, which is to use this medium for something except entertaining.
Television.
Television and films. I was saying that I thought television ought to do more than entertain. I don't think television is a superb medium of entertainment. I think it's a second-rate medium of entertainment. Basically a second-hand medium of entertainment. I think it shows movies in a small second-hand way. I think television drama is wonderful for the young fellows who want to break in and so on, but really isn't in the league of fine movies or theater or radio, which I think is superior. This is all personal opinion, needless to say. I think everything that is done in television as entertainment is less than the best that television is, which is basically, in my view, a medium of communication rather than of entertainment. You can expose a personality, you can deal with a subject, it's a medium of journalism, medium of ideas, of information, even a narrative medium, wonderful storytelling medium, as opposed to a dramatic medium. So to that extent, entertainment is possible on it.
When you said expose personalities...
In a good sense, I don't mean to show them up.
Have they not...
Expose them in the sense of film being exposed to
someone. Do you subscribe to this belief that the television shows what a man really is? You know, haven't there been a lot of phonies come across television and say...
There have been a lot of phonies who've looked me deep in the eye, you know, great con men.
And have fooled a lot of people.
Yes, fooled me and fooled a lot of people. I think you can fool the public just as much as you can fool your wife.
I've never been able to do it.
No, but I understand it's happened. You know, I've never fooled the public, much less my wife. But I know people do.
Well, what do you mean specifically?
I shouldn't say I've never fooled the public. I guess I have, but I've never intentionally fooled them. Let me put it that way.